Bloomberg Surveillance with Michael McKee and Tom Keane. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
With Michael Schull this morning. Michael, I've got to rip off the script to go right to one of your research items, which is this word Slack. Everyone's talking Slack. There's Slack out there. And within your optimism, you just push against that. We just saw that with PPI.
Yeah, I mean,
better than good.
I think the big surprise is going to be what we're going to be calling missing Slack. We just don't think it's there. And it's not going to be there where you need it. I mean, I do think at the national level, there's still a pool of unemployed people looking for jobs, willing to work. But I think in key portions of the U.S. economy and key regions of the U.S. economy, there simply is no slack. You're seeing the number of corporations talk about difficulty in hiring going up month in, month out. And you're seeing wage pressures, again, not at the national level, but certainly at the regional level and certainly at the industrial level. And it tends to be the early part of the industrial cycle,
right,
which is seeing wage pressure.
Within that, and there's like eight ways to go here, and we could, as always, folks, we can talk to Michael Schull till 12 noon today. We won't do that. We'll let the Hayes Advantage show up at 10 a.m. But Michael, within this, there's the gaming of the when of inflation. Alan Meltzer and Martin Feldstein mince no words. The when is now. Get out in front of it. But when do we begin to see a wage pull or cost push, however you want to call it, when do we see that?
At the level of CPI, one never knows. But at the level of corporate earnings, I think you're starting to see it now. I mean, I think you're starting to see certain parts of the U.S. economy advantage, that those parts of the U.S. economy that actually have pricing power, this is a great time. The commodity sectors, even as China slows, have done surprisingly well this year. And I think at the other end of the scale, when you get all the way along to retail, I think you're in a very, very tough situation because, the entire retail industry is built on a model of selling an awful lot of goods at a relatively cheap price. And although there's nothing wrong with the U.S. consumer, there's no sign that the U.S. consumer is ready and willing to pay more for the same goods.
You've made some news over the years talking about the certitude of commodities to the moon. And that didn't happen. Did we have a bear market in commodities?
Yeah,
is that a statement?
I think you did. I think the commodity space was a terrible place to be for the last 5 years. And it was a 5-year period in which almost anything else worked really well. Everything else apart from cash was a great place to be over the last 5 years. Pretty much all of fixed income was wonderful, and in the end all global equities, with the exception of commodity related equities, really did pretty well. And we think that process has probably come to an end. I mean, the commodity markets look to us to be much firmer than people would have expected. I know there's an absolute ton of oil being discovered and drilled as we sit here now, but crude oil looks very comfortable at $100 a barrel. And I think if it gets up above that 105 level, 110 level, I think you'll have a completely different rhetoric around the commodity cycle.
Can you own the hydrocarbons? Can you own the mining stocks?
Well, we do own energy stocks and mining stocks and agrochemical stocks. And, it's almost like going back in a time machine to 2004,
mm-hmm.
when people talked about the reflation trade. I think in the end, we're going to call this one the inflation trade. And that means that the end point is more difficult, but the starting point is very similar. You want to be in areas of the economy which would benefit from a general rise in prices.
But this is why it's so good to talk to you, this distinction between words that are thrown around like mince. Reflation implies you're at a disinflation or deflation, and you're trying to get on a policy basis to somewhere with price increase. An inflation trade is where we are now, where we've got price increase. You just look for more price increase.
Yeah, you're correct. And I think you look for the market to really push central banks into a corner. I mean, in a sense, they've done this by themselves. They had this crazy idea of targeting the unemployment rate both here and in the UK. And lo and behold, the unemployment rate moved. I mean, it was already moving it's moved in the same trend it's been in for the last 3-4 years, but it's just continued in that trend in a way they hadn't anticipated. So what you have now is a stepping away from employment data or a fudging of employment data. So now you have a range of data rather than one particular metric. But underpinning all of this is the concept that inflation is too low and is going to stay too low. And there's absolutely no possibility that one day inflation would be too high.
What will the central bank do? Quickly here, what will the central bank do? Will they delay? Is this a growing consensus? Or do you agree with our Bloomberg Markets poll that they'll raise rates sooner rather than later?
Well, I could say both. The first thing they'll do is delay. The first thing they'll do is firm up forward guidance and insist that they're not going to do anything and insist they're not going to be forced to doing anything. But I think if there were clear signs of inflationary pressures building, there's no rhetorical excuse left. You know, and at some point in time, they need to declare victory and move on. And remember, this would be a victory. This would be the absence of the depression. It would be the absence of a recession. It would be the firming of an economic cycle. And it would be extremely normal for the central bank to say that Lehman Brothers went down 6 years ago, and we don't need to have the same sort of monetary policy in place today.
Your team have tons of experience. When you hear people talk about use of cash, cash build, when they talk about share buybacks and dividend increases like we saw this morning with Macy's, is this a permanent part of our investment calculation and our investment future, or is it one-off sort of part of an era?
It's not exactly one-off, but I do think it's just a sign of the times. It's just it's a sign of corporations having, you know, tremendous amounts of liquidity. Now, they are starting to use it organically. You are seeing something of an M&A cycle. So that's an alternative use of corporate cash. And I think we certainly would hope that you're going to see an acceleration in capital expenditure. So, you know, I mean, I think where we've been so far in this cycle is corporations have amassed much more cash than they expected to. They haven't really know what to do with it. And shareholders are happy to take it back in the form of buybacks and dividends. But as I say, as the cycle matures, I would expect to see more organic internal use of cash by corporations.
What do they need to use it on at this point? I mean, you could say we haven't bought a new computer in a while, but I mean, where are we likely to see them put that money to work? What would do the most good for them?
Well, I don't know what would do the most good, but you know, I think cycles sort of follow fashionable trends. And I would say that M&A activity lagged significantly compared to what you would have expected, you know, given the sort of amount of recovery we've seen over the last 5-6 years. And that would seem to have changed. I think we're entering a much more normal M&A environment, and probably by the end of this cycle, you know, in the end, it'll be something of an M&A frenzy. So whether they need to do it or not, it's becoming fashionable for companies to buy each other. And most of the acquirers have been well rewarded for going out and purchasing something else. And, you know, I think corporate CEOs see that and say, you know, we'd like to do some of that. As far as capital expenditure is concerned, you know, we do think that most of the industrial sector and transportation sector has underspent so far this cycle. And I think they're going to normalize that expenditure going forwards. You know, I think that helps. I think that's what they should be doing. I think that corporations need to see that by spending more money, they can actually generate more earnings. I think that that's really going to be the key metric. But, you know, we think that's certainly possible.
Let me ask you, speaking of normalization, how you approach the world ahead, given what's happening in central banks, the European Central Bank talking about easing at a time when Mark Carney has to come out and say, we're not raising rates soon, and Janet Yellen is still you know, putting it off, but everyone expecting the U.S. and Britain to start raising rates in the next 12 months, if not sooner. How do you think about this world changing that we have been in now for almost 7 years?
You know, I think if the ECB eased, that might simply be it. I mean, that may actually mark the end of the end of this bond bull market. I mean, I think what people forget is that most large quantitative easing announcements have been followed by difficult periods for the bond market. Our long-term yields bottomed in late 2012, right as the second part of QE3 was being was being announced. And you know, I look at European yields where they are, and you know, even peripheral yields where they are. I wouldn't be surprised that if the ECB announced some kind of quantitative easing this summer, that was it, that really marked the low for longer-term yields in the developed world. Do they need to do it? You know, not clearly. Are they under political pressure to do it? Certainly. And will they bow to that pressure? Probably.
You deal with such an institutional orbit. One final question, if we could. To our audience, it doesn't have the advantages of market field asset management. Should they be fully invested now, given your optimism?
You know, I mean, I think last year was an easier year than this year. I do think that the transition into an inflationary environment is going to come with volatility, is going to come with volatility attached to it. I've argued consistently that cash is an underestimated asset class. It's really quite a useful place to be. I think the part of your portfolio that you squeeze is your fixed income portion, which really isn't very useful to you at this point in time. And I think you remain patient. I wouldn't be 100% in the equity market, but I would be invested in this equity market.
Michael Scholl, thank you so much.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.